RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Wondering as we go through the week, and it might even not take the whole week, if the Chargers announcement on Justin Herbert won't create a ripple effect all through the AFC. And not Pittsburgh or Baltimore, but everybody else just sort of, even New England. Like, New England could get to the one, but they'll need Denver to lose. Now, Justin Herbert is not going to play against Denver on the road. What are the odds? So does New England pull back? And then does Jacksonville? Well, Jacksonville still has to win their division. Maybe not so much there. And, of course, the Bills are a part of this. Like, the Bills and the Chargers had a kind of similar layout for if they wanted to go for it to get to the five, but the five is the highest they can go. And the Chargers are like, it's not worth it. I wonder if the Bills will end up saying the same. Sal Capaccio with us now, of course, on the field yesterday and with Sean McDermott at his press conference today. Did you get any sense of direction here from McDermott, Sal, today on which way he might be leaning for Sunday?
I guess I'd be reading the tea leaves a little bit, which is what you're asking me. I feel like Josh Allen's going to start to keep the starting streak alive, and then they'll get him out of there, whether that's one play or a series. Now, it has been pointed out to me, and it's right. He's one TD away from 40. That could mean something for sure. I don't know about like contractual incentives and things like that. Joe Brady even mentioned that when someone asked him about it on the Zoom call we just had. You know, the Bills, remember last year, put James Cook in after they got down near the goal line to get him that extra touchdown to break the record or tie it last year. So the big picture, though, Mike, I get the sense the Bills will prioritize getting guys healthy. The issue here is, though, even if that's the case, you can only dress 48 players, and you can only elevate two from the practice squad. It's not like you can go with a preseason roster here. There's not 90 right. guys on the roster, right? So some guys are going to play. I think the Bills will play this game to make sure they are healthy enough to get into the playoffs and as healthy as they can be. But I also think they'll want to win the game with the guys on the field. You know what I mean?
Yes. Winning the game does mean a little bit. I mean, in the standings. I'm not talking about psychologically, but right. you're the seven if you lose. And you'd like to be able to avoid that, if not for matchup reasons, just for the possibility of a home game later, remote as it might be.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm fascinated by the whole conversation of this part of it is one, right? Which is, do you prioritize the health of players? And I think they will, because they've been very banged up this year, and they have a lot of guys already now this week that are, you know, dealing with injuries, including Josh Allen. By the way, just on that, so everybody knows, McDermott said Allen is dealing with soreness. He is looking a lot like last week, but maybe in a better spot than he was early last week. So that's good news, obviously, because I think the foot clearly impacted him in some capacity yesterday. But he also said Terrell Bernard is going to be out for sure. They know that. Dalton Kincaid, Daquan Jones, Jordan Poyer, Jordan Phillips are all improving. But, I mean, even on those guys, you might want to kind of hold back. Now, Matt Prater might actually play. He said that he actually thinks that he should be able to play this week. Now, the part I'm fascinated about, though, is not just the resting guys. It's, do the Bills kind of have a hierarchy of order of how they want to, where they want to be, who they want to play, right? And how does everything that happens at 1 p.m. and then during their game impact that? I don't know if that's the case. That's really fascinating to me.
Yeah, it could a little bit. But if you have two heavy favorites going there with Jacksonville and Houston. And the likeliest scenario is the Jags. Would the Bills make an effort to avoid that in some way, is kind of your point, if they can? I don't know. Would you? Like, if I know it hasn't been ideal this year because of New England mostly, but if you're going to Jacksonville in round one, I can live with that.
Yeah, I think the question, Mike, is a fair question, which is if you're the Bills, like, do the Bills internally think there's a difference, and what would that difference be between going to New England or going to Jacksonville?
I would say
no. Would they prefer one or the other?
I would say no, because you might just get the other team the next week, you know? Like, does the order? The order is the question, I guess. Who do you want to play first? I doubt it would get that far. Do you disagree?
No, I don't. I do disagree a little bit. I think you have to think about those things, and where those rosters are right now. You know, I mean, because a 1 week could make a difference on injuries too.
Sure.
I think you think about it. No, I don't think it's the end all be all though. I don't think you play the game to put yourself in a position because there's so much out of your control, right? But New England, they might be a heavy favorite, but they have nothing. I mean, yeah, they could try to win the one seed, but they're looking and going, okay, Herbert's not playing, so the Broncos are most likely going to win. How hard do we have to go for this, right? I mean, they may just say, they might prioritize rest. And say, if we go for it and don't get it, what did we do there? We put guys in a position where they had to go an extra week where they could just start resting players. So I could see Miami winning that game. Suddenly New England falls to the three.
A point within this is, all right, well, it's not a week off like the one seed that everybody covets, but it's a version of that. It's a lesser version of that where you're taking the pressure off. You're resting your most important players, and you might even find a coach who prefers that to the entire week off. I don't know if you will, but you know, this week, if rhythm and continuity is a thing, you're able to continue with, you know, your routine playing a game, but you're just not putting it all on the line in that game rather than having players get away for a few days or whatever the one seeds guys would do normally. So I don't know. You can really get down the hole here pretty far. What on the point about the Bills and how they play Sunday, what is James Cook winning the rushing title worth, in your opinion?
I think it means something to them for sure. Now they'll know though, he's 47 yards up on Jonathan Taylor, but Taylor plays first. So if Taylor gets to 100 yards and James Cook needs, you know, 50 yards, 53 yards, whatever, I think that would be important to them. They would want that. I think it's important to James Cook. James Cook said it's important to him and his family. And I think the Bills, they've treated these kinds of things in the past to be important to them. Remember a couple of years ago, they wanted to get the, you know, record of how many different guys caught touchdown passes, right? Last year, same thing with James Cook. As I said, they put him in. He came out of the game against New England, and then they put him back in to get a touchdown later. So I do think it matters to them.
They put him back in, and he got stopped, and they left him in last year in New England. So, Yeah, no doubt. That was for the touchdown record, as I think you said. Well, working backwards, I guess, here, I've said it a few times today and then also last night. It really is a most unfortunate culmination to the stadium with all that it could have been. It's still, you know, an important day for nostalgia and memories and this. But what's the fan mindset on Sunday? It's that, you know, you compartmentalize it maybe. Like, you have the stadium, but this is probably it and it's not the end of the season. As opposed to even a non-playoff team, like a couple of drought teams, like Kyle Williams when he retired, where it's just like, oh, you have your party. And this is a different kind of party. There might be a more melancholy air to it than in another season because, you know, the whole point is to win a championship and they're going to have to go on the road to do it.
You know what's funny, Mike? I kind of look at it the other way a little bit here. I understand completely what you're saying, and there's no doubt. I remember when the schedule came out and we said, man, if this is actually the last game, something went horribly wrong this year, right?
Yep.
Well, it might actually be the last game and maybe something went horribly wrong. Thankfully, they're in the playoffs, but it looks like this will be the last game. And, you know, you want to have it where it means something and they're going for a championship, but you also then don't know when the last game is going to come. And maybe they lose the last game and it ends your season. And that's really terrible. And you're like, man, I remember walking off the field against the Kansas City Chiefs a couple of years ago at home and walking off the field against the Cincinnati Bengals at home. And man, that just sucks. It sucks at any point, but your last game, you're at home. If it's the last game at Highmark and you lose in the playoffs, I mean, that's how it's forever remembered. at least now, I would say the silver lining here is, and I'm not trying to, trying to spin it that way, but I do think, though, that you can have a little fun with it now. There's no angst. You know what I mean? Like, I think if they're in a position to try and win the division, there's a lot more angst going into this game as well. And it's like, you got to win. It's the last game. You're going for the division. There's so much surrounding it. It's the red helmets. It's all the memories. It's what everybody else is talking about. And I think you can go in this game and you can now kind of more focus on, let's have some fun with this.
Very well. That'll be interesting to talk to fans about throughout the week. Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. Now to yesterday. We've gone completely backwards here in time. The last play, sure, is maybe the easy answer to this. It was there and Allen missed. Beyond that, what had the most to do with the Bills losing this game, Sal? Would you say? I mean, it's not, I'm not going to point the finger at the defense here. I doubt you'll do that. No. But what was at the root of their problems offensively?
Critical mistakes in critical moments, and they do not have the type of team to overcome those as they have in previous years. The Bills have so much less margin for error this year on offense than they've had in previous years. When they make a mistake and a second down hold makes it a second and 14, it is way too tough to overcome compared to years before. When they have a goal to go situation and they only get a yard, and now suddenly they didn't advance the ball, or they get a negative play in some respect in any situation, they don't have the margin for error. When they have a fumble and a turnover, they don't have the margin for error. And to me, what happened yesterday was that came out big time. They totally outgained the Philadelphia Eagles over 300 yards of offense. A normal day, not a great day, a regular day in the NFL, maybe even a little less than that, but oh my God, 331 to 190 was the total, 4.5 yards per play to 3.5 yards a play. How did they not win? Because they made mistakes they couldn't overcome. They don't have the team to overcome that anymore on offense.
Was it only one first down by Philadelphia in the second half coming on their first possession? That sound right? I mean,
Mike, they had, you have to count the kneel down. It's a play. They had, counting that, they had 16 yards on 18 plays. If you don't count the kneel down, they had 17 yards on 17 plays in the second half. Jalen Hurts didn't complete a pass in the second half. He was 0 for 7. 13 of 20 in the first half. 0 for 7 in the second half. One first down. I mean, to lose a game like that, no. The defense did everything they could do. The only real kind of criticism I have for the defense yesterday is they gave up two very long third downs again early in the game. They gave up a third down and 10 and a third down and 12. And no, those are things that have happened a little too much this year. But whatever. I mean, they allowed 13 points. A short field is why Philadelphia really scored a touchdown. And that wasn't a great drive by the defense. But they did everything to keep this game within reach for the offense. And the offense, for 55 minutes, did not score a point. And that's unacceptable. You can't have that happen.
After their first possession of the second half, Philadelphia 13 plays for 3 yards in the game.
Amazing.
Pretty good.
I mean, they punted 5 straight possessions. The Bills run defense, which has been not good this year, against Saquon Barkley and the Eagles. The Bills did a great job. They held them to 82 yards rushing. They held Barkley to less than 4 yards a carry. And they basically just came in with a game plan and said, we are going to shut down Saquon Barkley and force Jalen Hurts to beat us throwing the ball. And he couldn't do it.
He had that situation very late in the game, 8 seconds or 18 seconds, and there's going to be a 10-second runoff. And the camera was glued to Sean McDermott as he stood next to an official waiting to call timeout. But he chose to not do it immediately. Did he get a question about that? I thought maybe he wanted to see Philadelphia line up, but I don't think the Bills lined up.
Unfortunately, no. It's good. I now that I think about it, it would have been a good question. My inclination at the time was he just wanted to make it the last play of the game. He didn't want to leave any time on the clock.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So you let it go down a couple seconds, you call timeout, and then because if you call timeout right there, because the Bills could have chosen, by the way, in that situation, each team had an opportunity to use a timeout in lieu of the 10-second runoff. They decided not to. Each team wanted the 10-second runoff, and the Bills decided we're also not going to call timeout here. Well, we'll let it run down a couple seconds, then we'll call timeout. So while I don't know the official answer, I believe it was because they wanted to make it the last play of the game.
And for all the grief a lot of us have given McDermott for that defensive timeout that he is so fond of, a lot of coaches are, Philadelphia did it before the two-point play. And what happened on the two-point play? Wide open receiver. So wonder if coaches ever see the math. I guess I don't have the math myself, but it just seems, anecdotally at least, it just seems so common where you get the defensive timeout. All right, let's get everything buttoned up, and then boom, you know, it breaks down anyway.
Well, and by the way, there was another play, even though he did call timeout there, they had the onside kick. The onside kick, you know, there was time left to try and do that. You know, there's a lot that we could say about those defensive timeouts. I know fans get frustrated with it. I mean, the other thing you're doing when you call the timeout is you're forcing the other team to go to their second best option a lot of times. So if you see what they're in, yes, there's a snapshot timeout. Well, people say, well, what does it matter? They're going to switch. Well, that might be the point. You call a timeout, you're forcing them to go to something else that they wanted to do. So there's always been also a little back and forth of, well, maybe you go out there with your second best look, you wait for them to call timeout, and then you go to your best look. So there's always a cat and mouse game. I never have a problem with coaches doing that. I mean, you know, you want to get to your best play and you want to have time to think about it. And the Bills had more time to think about it because they thought they scored the touchdown than the previous play, and they were ready to go for two, Mike. They had called for a two-point conversion. They were on the field, and they had all that time for the review. So they had a ton of time to figure out what play they wanted to run.
Sure. It's also something you might think about every day all year. We had a conversation. Yeah. I'm not sure if you were a part of it. Bulldog and I had a conversation like, what are you running on the two-point conversion for your season? We talked about this last week. Like, what are you running? That wasn't quite it, but close enough. I mean, this is the game on the line. Do you think, does the play call work for you? I know it was open, so it wasn't like they didn't. I mean, they got what they wanted, I guess, from the play call, which was an open Shakir. I might have guessed that it's Allen and, you know, five guys pushing him forward from the two, but maybe his injury has something to do with that. He did score two rushing touchdowns, you know, even still.
It's a little too far for me to go tush-push. I think 1 yard, maybe 2 yards is tough, especially with that interior line. I mean, the way Jalen Carter was playing, I think that's a little too far, plus the injury. Okay, so does the play work for me? I'm going to be results-based when I say this. I mean, it was a great play design. It worked. Josh just missed him, right? So, I mean, I don't know if there's anything you can complain about the play design. Khalil Shakir did say, by the way, after the game, it is something they had been working on. It is something that you keep in your back pocket. You don't show that play until you get to that moment, because if you show it, then you can't run it again. So you have that set, and you're like, you're right. What do you run if you get to a two-point play and your season's on the line? You have a couple of two-point plays that are kind of in your play sheet, in your arsenal, because maybe you have a couple during the game, but you do something that you've been working on and practicing and holding back, like the hook and ladder. That's something that they had been working on, but you only bring it out on a gotta have it moment. I thought, and I still believe, like, the best option here, even though the play actually worked, would be Josh Allen rolling with options. Put the ball into your best player's hands, Josh Allen, let him get on the move, and he's so good at running into the end zone or flicking it to somebody or throwing it to somebody, kind of like the fourth down play that didn't work earlier but probably should have if he sees Brandon Cooks or he throws it to him. Mm-hmm. That's because Josh Allen's going to draw so much attention when he rolls to his right that generally I think someone's going to be open. And if somebody stays home, he can take it. That, to me, was going to be the play and should have been, but I have no issue with the play they ran because it worked to perfection.
Then you can also
sneak the execution.
You can also sneak your extra lineman out to the left flat, and he walks in on that play you're thinking of. Two more quick ones. Kincaid, Eric Wood pretty much said it. Dan Orlovsky in a clip that I heard kind of said it. Basically that Kincaid is the skeleton key here to this offense. And then whenever he's ready, it's a whole different ball game, the Bills offense. I don't know. Like, he's been on the field a lot. They've had good days and bad. I know their numbers points-wise are at least a little better when he's been on the field this year. I still think the sample size is a little small for my taste. How important is Kincaid?
He's really important. And I don't think that when you talk about this or anybody talks about this, they should just focus on Kincaid's production. What it does is it allows, right now, like, there's no other threat on the team, and he gives you a threat in the middle of the field. And because you struggle so much on the outside, at least that gives opportunity for guys on the outside to have a little bit more of a softer landing spot, maybe on routes, right? Which is, okay, if you have to focus on Dalton Kincaid in the middle of the field, maybe I have another option outside where I normally wouldn't. Because right now, there's nothing like that. Yeah, you can throw it to Dawson Knox. They had a nice play action where that happens, but he's not a guy teams are focusing on. So I just think it comes down to how everybody kind of fits in a little bit better and has maybe an easier path to do what they have to do when Dalton Kincaid is. And yes, he is a good player, and he also can be a good matchup for you, obviously.
Okay, and one more, and this is also one we've been over and over, but it, my word for this is, it's astonishing to me that with all the flux at receiver and for as little production as they're getting week to week, that Coleman isn't any part of it. Like, it's not that he was that productive, Sal, but they're going into these games grasping at straws at wide receiver. Mecole Hardman, no, released. Gabe Davis, you know, Brandon Cooks. And Coleman isn't even dressed. It's astonishing.
Well, but Mike, you answered your own question earlier. I heard you. They don't trust him. Simple as that. They don't trust him, I think. That's where it, what it comes down to right now. And, you know, I think there's off-the-field stuff there. And when you have a pattern of not being trusted off the field, then coaches aren't going to trust you on the field. If you're not going to do the little things that get you to Sunday, then how can we trust you to do what you're supposed to do on Sunday? And on top of it, I think there's, you know, there's eyes on you. There's people watching. There's other players in the locker room who understand I'm doing everything I can. And, you know, if he's not doing everything he can, why is he playing or being rewarded? And I'm not saying that's necessarily going on, but I that's how football teams and organizations work. And I just think they're at a point where if he's not going to do the things that we need him to do, or we can't trust him off the field, then how are we going to trust him on the field? And we're not going to reward him for that. This week would be a week to play him, though, because if you're going to rest guys and, you know, have guys out there who are, you know, backup, so to speak, or whatever, put him out there and let him see and show, hey, we're going to put you out there. But now the challenge is you go make plays against a Jets team that looks terrible right now. And we're going to throw you the ball, and you're going to make plays. And I think that's his opportunity this Sunday, maybe.
Very similar to last year. Remember last year in New England, which was a Trubisky-Mike White game, he got 10 targets and went 2 for 31 on 10 targets. I mean, it's not Josh Allen, in fairness to Coleman. I wonder if they'll throw that out in the playoffs, or if the calculus changes on, you know, about how many meetings he missed or whatever it is. We'll see in time. Sal, any fantasy sweats last game of the season tonight?
No, none for me. I was in my semifinals in my two big leagues both last week and lost in both. And, of course, this week, the same team outscores everybody, and I would have won the championship if I was in it, but that's the way it rolls in fantasy.
That's how it goes sometime. I know a guy who's got a pretty good one, if I might
be able
to share. So I host ADP Chasing, a fantasy podcast, every Tuesday through the off season, then once a month during the season. The man I replaced as the host of that show, Sam Sherman, is playing for $2 million tonight.
No way.
Best Ball Mania, the signature best ball tournament that thousands of people enter, $25 a pop. He's in first place going into tonight. I think Pitts and Puka are bad for him, but he's got a great look at it. He had Purdy and Burden. What a night.
Wow.
You're in that position. You get 5 more touchdowns from Brock Purdy and Luther Burden over 100. And how about it? I mean, I don't know this guy very well. I've talked to him and his brother once or twice.
Do you know what he needs or what would hurt him, like how he loses?
Only as much as I just said. Like, I don't know numbers because there are too many other people who would be, you know, candidates to win it, depending on what happens tonight. But I think Puka and Pitts are bad for him, which is not the best position, not the best two guys to have to fade in a game like this. But
that is amazing.
Who knows? Could be a very big night. And one of my co-hosts on that show, Pat Corain, has already won this tournament for $2 million the year of the Hamlin game.
Man, you're just hanging out with people, millionaires, winning millions all over the place. A buddy of mine had won the $1 million, whatever it was, Al Zeidenfeld a few years ago, and he had done a fantasy show for many years.
Mm-hmm. I know that name. All right, so eventually you'll find out how this went.
I'll be sure to
update you. Thank you, Sal.
You got it.
Sal Capaccio's appearances on WGR brought to you by Outlet Liquor, George Urban Boulevard in Depew, your place to buy a case. Outlet Liquor, what's your outlet? Coleman, Kincaid, yesterday in the rain, the end of the stadium, the playoff bracket, how hard to try. No shortage of topics around here on this Buffalo Bills Football Monday. 803-0550 for your calls. I'll be looking for them until 6. Brian Koziol will join me then. We'll talk a little Sabres as they go for their 9th straight win tonight. I'm Mike Shope, and this is WGR.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system, It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
You've seen, you know, we're trying to find the right combination and continuity is important. So we'd love to have that right week to week, you know, depending on how the game plan turns out. And some of those things, I think those are the questions we start every week with of, hey, who do we have available? What does the game plan look like? You know, and then we go from there. And some of those, sometimes, as you know, what we've done, say with McColl over the last few weeks or 1 week for sure lately with Cleveland game was to have him as the, call it the fifth wide receiver slash special teams piece there too. So a lot of different ways to put it together, and we'll see how it looks this week with Keon and beyond.
Sean McDermott, no Keon Coleman again yesterday. Coach's decision, inactive. No Dalton Kincaid again yesterday, and he's somebody injured. He's somebody that I think more people, maybe many more people, would expect to make a difference when back on the field. I've been listening to that today from Eric, from Sal, from Dan Orlovsky, for what it's worth, and I don't know yet. I don't know yet. Like, Kincaid for me more has been, geez, why doesn't he get the ball more? Why doesn't he play more snaps? Almost the same thing. Run more, he runs routes when he's out there, but he's not out there a lot. And then he gets hurt again, and that goes away for the time being until he comes back, and then we kind of ask those questions again. I mean, this is taking it too far the other way, I think. I don't mean to like slant that against the guys who've come on and made these points about Kincaid and his value. But I doubt when he does come back, and I'm assuming he eventually does, probably not this week though, right, if I'm playing it carefully, it's not like they're going to lean into him. You know, he's still been a here and there kind of a couple of bigger, ideally, a couple of bigger plays per game. He has two games this year. I want to look at this again. I had it up earlier. He has 200-yard games, I think. Yes, Chiefs and the Patriot loss, not in that order. So New England, 6 for 108. Kansas City, 6 for 101. Caught all his targets in each of those games. And he gets hurt in Miami. Misses almost a month. Back for the Bengals. Touchdown against the Bengals. 4 for 41 and then 3 for 34 in New England before one target last week against Cleveland and inactive yesterday. Well, it's another thing we have to talk about. No shortage of topics here. How hard to go this week? The vibes seem to be that the Bills will play it carefully. Maybe this will end up being almost the entire AFC. I doubt the Jaguars hosting Tennessee will rest starters. What they'll want is to get out to a point where they can do that later in the game. But they're still vulnerable to a Houston division win. So Jacksonville would not have this mindset, I think. I would be shocked if they did, the way the Chargers and maybe the Bills or even the Patriots will end up playing it, which is, you know, carefully with injuries. And to the Jacksonville point, I think also Houston will push, still having a chance, but they're close. They're somewhat close to where the Chargers were. The Chargers couldn't win the AFC West after losing to Houston, as it happens. So that was out, and they're just going to pass on scrapping for the 5 or the 6. They're just going to rest Justin Herbert. They've already announced it. And play it more like a preseason game this week. Houston could do that, but that would be really something to do that with a chance at the AFC South. This is where the Bills would have been, where Houston is now, is where the Bills would have been had they won yesterday. And I think we'd be debating that even in that case, how hard to go this week. One game back of New England with the Patriots hosting Miami. And, you know, that way, at least you push New England a little bit toward having to give a full effort. But that's out. And we'll see what the Patriots do playing only for their seeding. They still have a shot at the one. Denver plays at the same time. Denver's playing against whoever that is. Easton Stick? I don't even know who that is. So maybe New England has this to debate. But had the Bills won, I mean, I had friends yesterday. Maybe it was you that thought, especially as the game was playing out and Allen was hobbling and they couldn't score, you probably, if you weren't this person, you know this person. Take them out. Give up on yesterday. They don't, and they come so close to winning. Had they won it, now what do we do? All out, Allen on a bum foot, hoping that the Dolphins with Quinn Ewers go to Foxborough and win or take a pass. It would have been an interesting discussion. Now it's easier, I think, this way, because there's no AFC East. And I don't know. I heard Sal talking, you heard what I said to him maybe as well, about trying to line yourself up for certain opponents. I don't even like the thought of it for the Bills right now, because they have to be thinking about winning it all. That's what this season was meant for. They're in the tournament, and their attitude has to be bring it on. Oh, Jacksonville. Oh, New England again. Denver. Bring it on. That's just the bottom line. And any sort of manipulation effort to, well, we really want to play Jacksonville first, and then maybe we can get to play a home game, and then this. It, to me, it's just not worth it. It's not even worth the time of thought. Like, just, you're the Bills. You're the, even today, the second betting choice in the AFC after losing to Denver. You're the team that might be favored against anybody in these playoffs. We don't need to spend any energy, especially when you can't control it anyway, on trying to line yourself up for a certain path. Not worth it, in my opinion. Bring it on. If it's Jacksonville, whoever it is, fine. And that comes out in the approach to this game against the Jets, or it might, where whatever seeding you give us, we'll take it. We'll be ready. Certainly that's how they'll talk. I doubt you're going to get anybody to cop to, oh yeah, you know, we've looked at the standings, and if this happens and this happens, and if we lose, that's actually good. Don't even go there. Just get through Sunday. Find your opponent. Bring it on. Let's go. Right? 803-0550 is the number. My friend Greg tweeted one of our annual little hobbies this week, trying to predict the playoff schedule. You got to love a schedule prediction show or tweet or just a segment, whatever. Where would Bills Jaguars go? Sunday one was his prediction. Makes sense to me. The Monday night, so this is the wild card weekend. The Monday night has been a 4-5 game, so that the way the brackets work, everybody knows who they're going to play. And you watch that game as whoever, whether that's the one seed or whoever it is, knowing the winner of that game is your opponent. Everything else is sort of settled, and everybody else will know who their opponent is in round two. So they make it, it wouldn't necessarily be like that if you put, say, a 3-6 game, where, well, if this team wins, then that, or vice versa. 4-5 cuts that out. So that's been the game, and because it's the last game of the weekend, or, you know, Monday night, that's what they do historically in that game. It's only been a few years. And one other part to that, if you don't mind, is travel. And right now it looks like whether it's San Francisco or Seattle or perhaps even LA, somebody from the West Coast is going to Tampa or Carolina. Long trip. That's going to be one of the 4-5 games. And I doubt the NFL would put, say, the Rams on the Monday night in Tampa Bay or Carolina, and then they get home middle of the night on Tuesday if they win, and it's back at it Saturday or Sunday. There's no Monday the following weekend. So that, I think, is a lesser option than what the AFC game would be, which is, you know, maybe Houston at Baltimore. It's a shorter distance, and I think that's probably, I'd put the AFC North Sunday night game winner into the Monday night wild card weekend spot right now. Let's go to Rich next. Hi, Rich.
Mike, wishing you and your family a happy holiday.
Thank you.
I've been listening to the radio all day, and I haven't heard a single person address what I consider was the major problem in that football game, the line of scrimmage. Our offensive line was horrible. They were getting blown up left and right. I mean, I think Josh got sacked 5 times. I'm not sure. But what, hit 17 times? And, Mike, how many times did you see Cook take a handoff and then get hit immediately for negative yards? I mean, they lost the line of scrimmage. They had no chance. Your quarterback took a beating again, just like the Houston game. It was exactly the
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if it...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first 2 orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Same thing. And, you know, to think that this team can go anywhere with that offensive line is ridiculous. Nobody's rooting for them more than I am, but come on.
Well, you know. I mean, I think the matchup needs to be mentioned in this because it's a tough opponent, as is Houston. But I'm not, like, maybe as negative about the Bills line as you sound. I'm not real optimistic, though, for that to look – how good it probably needs to look 3 weeks in a row on the road. And on the road, you're talking maybe not Jacksonville, but Denver is one of the top challenges for any offensive lineman, I think, as a road team, because it's super loud, and I don't even know if the altitude matters in this, but it might, conditioning, and just that timing element where it's such an advantage to the home team. Yesterday, the Eagles, yes, still got home, you know, plenty of times, and up the middle. The one Jalen Carter sack when he went through Torrance was a sight to see. Like, wow. Damn, some of these hits the Bills took in this game. 3 plays in a row. Cook being cartwheeled, Allen, and then Shakir on third down is when it sort of woke me up. Like, they are getting really manhandled in some aspects of this game. Still could have won it. Maybe should have. Thanks, Rich. I'm Mike Shope. We have Brian Koziol coming up at 6. The Sabres and Blues tonight, pregame at 7 here on WGR.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.